and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. According to an analysis by the academic journal Nature, Malaysia is among the countries with the highest retraction rates of published academic research papers in 2023. Now, the report exposes an alarming trend. For every 10,000 Malaysian research papers published, a staggering 17.2 were retracted. This figure stands three times higher than the global average, raising serious concerns about the credibility and integrity of Malaysian academic research. Is this a mere statistical anomaly, or does it point to systemic challenges in academia that demand our urgent attention? Let's ask our guest today on the show. Our first guest is UK Menon, who is chairperson of the Malaysian academic movement, GERA, which is an association of Malaysian academics committed to educational reform. He has 40 years in academia across Malaysia, Australia and the US. Menon, thank you for joining me on the show today. What do you make of this, of the recent Nature analysis revealing that Malaysia has one of the highest retraction rates of academic research papers in 2023?
Melissa, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm delighted to be here and to say a few whatever I can on the subject. I think the first thing is not to get terribly excited about this these statistics. I mean, the numbers seem to be staggering. You are placing Malaysia number six in a list of countries that have retracted journal articles. The whole position about retraction itself, you know, is something that has been going on for as long as journals have been published, and the reasons why one would want to retract has to be examined or has to be looked at against a more general background about how knowledge is created and the fact that knowledge is always provisional. That's you know, you are not at any given time able to state the final truth on anything else, and therefore being number six in a list and having 17.2% of your journals being retracted requires some examination of the reasons as to why these retractions happen and what contributes to this. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that knowledge needs to be reviewed and revised is one factor, but that is not all there is to the
Can I ask you then, do you not think that it is misconduct or lack of academic integrity that's behind these retractions? Is this purely a case of having to review the material or information changing and having to update that?
I can't say that because the statistical evidence that we have from various sources, including the journals that are actually published, show that the larger part of these retractions are brought about by what they call the FFP, falsification, fabrication, and plagiarism. These are the three main elements in academic misconduct. Now, the British system has added another element in that, which is misrepresentation. So all of these things have actually contributed to the retraction of journals. So you can't just dismiss this as saying that this is a process. It's a natural process of knowledge creation, knowledge preservation, and maintenance of knowledge. So there is a real concern that even if a small fraction of that number of retractions are caused by falsification, fabrication, and plagiarism and misrepresentation, and we need to be worried about how far down or how far up this spectrum the retractions go, or the reasons for the retractions go. Is this just academics who actually have made some mistakes, worked on on a preliminary assumption, and then found that they needed to make changes to that and withdraw the publication or request the publication to be withdrawn? These are some of the things that you need to ask. So I think you can't just dismiss it as saying that this isn't important, we can move along. Also, I think it's also important that we are not distracted by this set of information on journal publications from examining some other root problems, root problems that you face in our, you find in our universities, and right. This probably is an outcome of years of neglect of those other areas, of how you recruit, of how academic staff are promoted, and what are the terms of service, and some of the legislation that we have in this country. You know, we talk about these three, the FFP and the misrepresentation as one element, and fraud as being a larger element. But you must also understand that in this country, there is a whole lot of legislation that controls publication. Besides the normal, or rather the standard international reasons for retractions, I guess.
I just want
to finish this. That actually, if you look at the public universities in this country, they are regulated by what I call is probably, you know, one of the most draconian legislation, the statutory bodies discipline and disciplinary act, which was passed in 2009, I think. Or it was applied to the universities in 2009. Mm-hmm. And there is the legal prohibition against publishing anything that is critical of the university or of the government. So you can, and you know, in part of the work that we do now, as you know, this little collective of academics that I work with, is we've heard over the last 10 years or so, people coming to us and saying, look, we have been accepted for publication, but we are now concerned that what we publish may actually have violated some of these other rules, not your your academic misconduct, but the general law for this country. So there are a whole range of things that concerns the academics, you know, when they set out to write something or publish something. So as I said, it's not just a question of asking, you know, this is number six in the world list, and that we are looking at retractions. We need to look at it against the wider backdrop of the way in which universities operate in this country, and the legislations that control publication.
Thank you so much for speaking with me, UK Men and Chairperson of the Malaysian Academic Movement there. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. We're discussing the recent revelation that Malaysia is among the countries with the highest academic paper retractions. How concerned should we be? Joining us now is Dr. Idlan Zakaria, Associate Professor with Birmingham Business School at the University of Birmingham in the UK. She was formerly the CEO of the Malaysian think tank, The Centre. Dr. Idlan, thank you for joining me on the show today. How seriously should we be taking this news of the high number of paper retractions? I'm asking because I'm wondering whether retractions are par for the course in academia, you know, as knowledge and information expands and changes and evolves, that some papers might need to be retracted. But how seriously should we be taking this?
Hi, thank you, Minister, for having me. I would probably just jump straight in and say that what we should be really looking at is the root cause of why papers are retracted, because there are different reasons. You could have gender mistakes that happen during the research process, which requires a retraction. And then there might be malice or kind of some sort of misrepresentation behind why a paper is submitted. So if there is manipulation of the process, example, that would be something that is more concerning. So I kind of looked this up a little bit before we came online, and there's actually a paper that was published in 2018 by three researchers in University of Malaya who actually looked at why Malaysian papers were retracted by various publishers. And they found that the majority of the papers, in fact, about 90% was due to violation of publication principles. So it wasn't a genuine mistake, but some sort of manipulation process. So to that end, for me, this issue is concerning because it adds to the question of why are we violating these principles?
Okay. How easy is it to manipulate the system for publication? I assumed that academic publications go through a rigorous peer review process before it can be published. So how easy is it for malice to creep into publishing academic papers?
Right. So it would depend on who you have as your editor of the publication journals, and also what kind of process that is in place. As you said, there is a peer review process, right? And the editor has power to assign who is going to peer review your paper. So there's discretion on the editor's part to find friendly parties, for example, if there is a conflict of interest, because even though it's blind peer review, the editor knows who, obviously the editor would know who submitted because it arrives on their desk with the information. Secondly, is a route that is commonly used is what we call the special issues route, where academics often offer themselves as guest editors. So these might not be vetted in the same way as the normal editors. And what special issues generally are special issues on a topic that is published within the journal that might be linked to a particular conference or a particular event. The motivation being that if you attend this event, your publication, your paper would be published. It's what we call a speedier route to getting a publication because it circumvents part of the normal process, which could take, depending on the subject area, between 6 to 18 months.
Right. So can we talk about why some academics are seeking a faster route? There's significant pressure on academics to continually produce and publish research papers. How do we address that? Does that feed into this culture or this situation of high retraction rate of academic papers?
So I think we need to take a step back holistically and think about what incentives and what support we have in place to encourage academic publishing. There is the whole adage we've all heard of, you know, publish or perish. But it goes a lot deeper than that because what you want to be doing is publishing quality publications. Now, we have a lot of KPIs and targets that we have to meet, many metrics, but the metrics are often quantified. It's not a subjective metric. The evil side, or rather the darker side of metrics, is the unintended consequences, which we don't often think about too much because they are hidden. We don't see it until it plays out. So if you want, for example, for you to move up in the university rankings, you have to have X number of publications. You could impose this, right? I could say, Melissa, I want you to do 8 shows today because that's your KPI, because we have to be the best, right? We have to have most consistent amount of content, right? But you know that doing 8 shows is not humanly possible. But if there is pressure to do that and the target is set and thinking, well, that's going to challenge you, that's going to be able to motivate you, there is a plateau effect at one point where the motivation effect starts to go down. Mm. And if we put these challenges in place to require high levels of publications within a short period of time, for example, the unintended consequence of that might be trying to find shortcuts, because a lot lies on the publication process for academics. This is how they get promoted. So there is a need to perhaps step back and take stock of the situation. We see the outcome, but what is the root cause here? And can we actually review how we motivate our academics, how we put in place different structures? In fact, I just like to point out an article that was sent to me, completely unrelated to, I wasn't discussing this, but published in Ultrasound Malaysia on the 8th of January, about 30,000 lecturers facing increased stress because of the amount of work that they have to do and the difficulty in juggling research and teaching given the workload amount. So this is not something that is unrelated. I think it all feeds in together. And if we want to address it, we need to take stock, take a step back and do a deep dive into, you know, what our KPIs are, what our policies are. Are these policies realistic in effect?
Does it all feed into the fact that all universities are chasing global rankings of some sort, and all these KPIs feed into the frenzy of trying to achieve a higher ranking? How do we rethink that, the role of global rankings in these unintended consequences?
So global rankings is actually quite an interesting area. There's a whole subset of performance measurement research just looking at the unintended consequences of, you know, university rankings, because as you quite rightly point out, the parameters such as number of citations or number of researchers come and play really highly into a number of different university rankings. So some university rankings rank this as high as 75% of the reputation of the university. So if you play that game, then you have to start thinking, okay, do I want to be the next Harvard? Do I want to be in the top 100? Do I want to be in the top 200? But you also have to, if I may use a Malay phrase, uko bajudi badan sendiri, because who are we and what resources do we have to achieve this? Because what you don't want is academic burnout. We have, you know, very, very talented academics in Malaysia. We have them qualified from so many different universities around the world. But even if you have the best swimmer and you put him in shallow water, he's not going to be able to swim. So if you chase these rankings without actually evaluating what support you have, what resources you have, and actually play it as a long game instead of trying to create immediate short-term results, then there is a serious danger. The University of Utrecht in the Netherlands have actually removed themselves from this equation completely. They said, we're not playing the ranking games anymore. That is interesting because they have the clout. They're a Western university. They're fairly established, right? But if you are a university in an emerging economy, how do you exercise that clout? If you don't play the game, then you're going to be left out. That is the kind of dilemma that is there. The university rankings, I think, initially started off as a very interesting and very positive thing because it provides information for people who don't know about what is quality, right? But the measurement, the metrics are put in place, and also the insider consultancy. So you could actually, in some of these organizations, they will provide universities consultancy on how to move further up the rankings. So it now becomes an industry. We haven't got time to the whole of that in itself, but it's a very interesting kind of sub-industry that a lot of academics feel is detrimental to the root of, you know, teaching and learning and knowledge creation in itself.
Thank you so much for speaking with me, Dr. Idlan Zakaria from the University of Birmingham in the UK. We're going to take another very quick break here and consider this. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about the high rate of academic paper retractions in Malaysia. It's 3 times higher than the average rate for all countries. Now let's speak to Dr. Sharifah Munira Al-Atlas. She's an independent scholar and deputy chair of the Malaysian Academic Movement, GERA. Dr. Munira, thank you for being on the show with me today. What do you think are some of the root causes, the main reasons behind this high number of academic journal retractions in Malaysia?
Thank you, Melissa, for having me. I think basically the main reason behind the high volume of retractions in Malaysia has a lot to do with misconduct. Contrary to what you hear being discussed, that it might be due to honest mistakes or errors. Now, misconduct, by misconduct, I mean issues of plagiarism, duplicate or redundant publications, and specifically also peer review misconduct. We have single blind and double blind review. Single blind is when authors do not know who the reviewers are, and double blind is when the authors and the reviewers don't know each other. Only the editors of the journals know everybody involved. So there is misconduct on the part of the editors or even the authors who surreptitiously get to know who the reviewers are. So there's this sort of peer review misconduct that is going on. Of course, it is difficult to track, but nevertheless, it has to be done if we're going to overcome this problem of unethical publishing.
All right. So Nature, the publication that produced this analysis, said that most of the articles retracted were because of concerns over the peer review process, which they say have been compromised. Why do you think that happens? Why do you think that there is that some academics resort to misconduct, that resort to systematic manipulation of the publication peer review process? Why go down that route?
Okay, I think this is a bigger question that involves the overall neglect or oversight of academic integrity in our campuses, in our universities. A systematic or regular investigations are not carried out as to why retractions have taken place in the first place. Who is responsible and who should be punished when this list of retractions are published. Also from the perspective of the types of articles produced by our academics, our journal retractions have actually minimal impact because the article written was not meant to impact society in the first place anyway. So when you retract the article, nobody misses the article in the first place. However, what is really damaging to the reputation of the university. So that's why it's become such a big issue. Journal retractions are a big issue. But getting to the bottom of the reason why there's so much misconduct, we have yet to address it. So I think there is a lack of, among the university management, there is a lack of desire to get to the bottom of why we are so unethical in our publishing.
Why the reluctance to go down that to unearth or open that can of worms? Why?
Well, yes, it is a can of worms. I suppose there is also a lack of systematic committees that have been formed to investigate unethical practices. The unethical or the misconduct also is from the very top, right down to the first year lecturers who just joined the university. So it's a systemic problem. And it involves a lot of soul searching. And we have to tackle it from top to bottom, from bottom to top. But who is willing? Which vice chancellor is actually willing to do this? So I think we have to seriously, media, for instance, your program, for instance, talking about this, we have to keep highlighting the issue because it is a very real problem. The other problem is that we are highlighting it only with respect to the hard sciences. There is a lot of journal retraction, or there should be a lot of retraction in the social sciences and the humanities, but we don't read about it too much. Now, that is another discussion because maybe global retraction watchers like Retraction Watcher, Retraction Watch, the group, focuses mainly on the sciences. Mm. But there is a whole different chapter when we deal with social science publishing. There's a lot of misconduct there as well. And if you think about it, Malaysia as a developing country depends a lot more on, or a lot as well, on social science research and analysis.
Hmm. So you pointed to maybe the reluctance to dig deeper into this topic or the reluctance to institute reforms, but what would you like to see in terms of fostering a culture of academic integrity in academia, one that values ethical behaviors and intellectual rigor?
Well, I guess your question is about basically related to how can we tackle this problem of misconduct. Basically, I would say we need more investigation, as I mentioned, by the media, but also civil society groups and university management itself to constantly track who the retractors or detractors are. university management should follow up when a report comes out about the high percentage of journal retractions. University management should follow up on these retractions. But are they? Yeah. I don't know. We've been publishing since the mid-2000s, since 2018, 22, then 23. And still nothing has changed. There's been an upward trajectory of journal retractions.
Right.
So, yes.
Dr. Bhura, can I just ask you, you alluded to earlier that, you know, these high rates of retractions impact the reputation of Malaysian academic institutions, but who does it hurt if we don't address this problem?
Well, it from the point of view of the university, it hurts their ranking. But from my point of view, as a member of society, it hurts our development. If we are basically overlooking in our university basic ethical practices in how we produce knowledge, how does that translate into the larger aspect of ethics in how we conduct our lives out there in society? So, I mean, this is the message that is constantly being spread in our society. We debate it in talk shows like this or in meetings, but hardly anything is done because we are not making that concerted effort to catch the top dogs or the top people who are committing these academic crimes, letting them get away with it. As I said, it's a systemic issue. It's from top right down to bottom. So that's where I stand on this problem.
Right. Thank you so much for being on the show with me today. Dr. Sharifah Munira Al-Attas, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.